Hi, I'm Candace Malcolm, and welcome to the Candace Malcolm Show. It is great to be with you here today. Happy Friday. Really enjoying being back at work here. This is the third straight week that we've done the podcast. We've been doing it every day for an hour, covering all of the news, culture, politics, and opinion, usually with a guest. So let us know what you think about the show. If you like the new format, give us any feedback. You know, we read the comments, pretty much every single comment. I love hearing what you have to say, your feedback, your ideas for future shows. We're always reading there. So please let me know in the comments. And also, please don't forget to like this video. I know it's like kind of pedantic to just say like the video, but it really helps with discoverability for people who haven't seen what we're doing here yet. So if you like it and you want to help us promote the podcast, share the podcast, please go ahead and like it, subscribe it. If you're, subscribe to the channel if you're listening on the podcast and you enjoy the show, consider giving us a 5-star review. So we're going to talk today about Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP party, because from my perspective, it's all his fault. The reason that we're in this mess is all because Jagmeet Singh continues to prop up this Liberal government. He's now flip-flopping back and forth. Is he going to support the government? Is he not? This shouldn't even be a question, folks. Remember back in December, he made it perfectly clear that he was going to pull the plug, that he was going to vote down the government. He even said it doesn't even matter who's the leader of the party needs to go down. We need an election. Then on Tuesday, he kind of flip-flopped, and now we're back to we don't really know. So we're going to get into all of that. We're also going to talk about the Alberta COVID report that came out. It was kind of tabled quietly last week, not a lot of coverage outside of Alberta, but there's a lot of really good important things in there. So we're going to get to all of that. And today I am delighted to be joined by a guest who've never had on the podcast before, but I've been a longtime fan of this individual. His name is Sean Newman. Sean's the host of the Sean Newman podcast, where he discusses issues relating to faith, family, and the broader Canadian political landscape. He's a former professional hockey player. He played hockey in Finland, wow, before returning back to Western Canada and transitioning into a career in the oil patch. And now he's a podcaster. He's been doing the show for many years, started back in 2019, and he's interviewed very influential people, including Danielle Smith, Dr. Robert Malone, and Dr. Peter McCullough. Wow, excited to talk to you, Sean. So welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out. Appreciate you having me on and happy to be here.
Great. Well, we're going to get to all of the news. I think this Jagmeet Singh story is just maddening for so many of us, because here's an individual who doesn't have any kind of mandate by Canadians. He's the leader of the third party. He wasn't voted for to lead us in any way. And yet he's the one that's holding the balance of power. I mentioned this on the show on Wednesday, but I'm just going to read it again. This was sent to me by a conservative operative, but he writes that as a reminder, as last count, Jagmeet Singh and the NDP have voted up the Liberals 8 times since he supposedly ripped up that supply and confidence agreement. So the supply and confidence agreement was in place. Jagmeet Singh propped up the government 267 times during that agreement, and he had done so 11 times prior for a grand total of 286 times just since the last election. That's how many opportunities he had to pull the plug and take down this awful government, but he hasn't. He's propped them up. His explanations don't really make sense as to why. I think the only reasonable reason this person is still doing this is because he wants his pension. I don't know what else to make of it. I don't know why else he would prop up this terrible government given everything that's happened. So Sean, give me your perspective and then we'll get to the latest here.
Well, I mean, I think you nail it. I think there's a whole lot of Canadians. I come from, you know, in my intro, you mentioned I used to play hockey, and I'm going to point it out to your listeners because they'll probably dig it up. You know, I was nowhere near the NHL. I want to make that adamantly clear. Every time that gets said, I'm like, well, I did play. But, you know, my hockey career took me in a lot of places, which ended in Finland. And the reason I think it's important to talk about where I come from is I didn't spend a ton of time on, you know, out in Ottawa or around this realm. I've been learning, and I think there's a whole new class of Canadian learning about how the policies and how the structure of our politics really works, because COVID really brought it down on all of us. It seeped into everyone's life. None of us escaped from it. And since we've come out of there, we've all been waiting for an election. I mean, like, okay, it's going to happen here in 2025. And then we've had more theatrics than, you know, most countries get probably in a, you know, I don't know, in a decade, 2 decades we've had in the last year, let alone before that. And just when you think we're getting close, you know, Jagmeet Singh comes back to the top of the news cycle. I'm like, this guy just won't let it go. Just say you're going to do what you're going to do. You're going to get your pension anyways, right? Like, I think a lot of us, had rightly surmised that he's going to wait until he gets his pension. Mm-hmm. He's just going to dodge every question. None of it's going to make sense. None of it has made sense. except for the money, right? He's going to get his pension. Okay, fine. And we're going to get it. And now you start to see where he's kind of like, well, we'd have to think about the working class Canadian. We'd maybe have to think about, you know, these payments again and all these different things. And you're like, what is he doing? Like, I get it. He is the guy that's holding them in. And I'm just like, I just don't get it. I don't get the NDP. I, we joke on our show that they're not a serious party. They certainly don't have a serious leader. And yet he is, as you've pointed out, the person that's holding this thing all together for the Liberals right now. Because if he just says he's voting them out, you know, in what is it, a couple months, boom, they're gone. We have an election. We're going to have a new prime minister and we carry on with life. And I think a lot of us are starting to wonder, you know, if Carney gets in, which it kind of looks like, you know, that's the way the winds are shifting. Can Carney talk to Jagmeet and seed an idea of like, hey, just leave me in until October and we'll do some things. We'll help you out. And we'll do the, and it's like, well, Jagmeet's track record would suggest he'd be open to that conversation. And I don't know. It's, I thought we were out of this, Candace. I really did. And I, you know, at the start, I talked about hockey and how I don't have a background in this. I'm continually learning how our system works. And I think a lot of Canadians are too. And so it'll be interesting to continue to watch and talk about how this is all playing out up here.
Well, you know, I, the opposite, I've been involved in this horrible world of politics for longer than I'd like to admit. Getting all the way back. And so when I look at it, I do kind of look at it from like a cynical political perspective where, yes, like these guys are going to hold on to power any way that they know how. And no one wanted Jagmeet Singh in this position of power, but he found himself in it, propping up the government. And he kind of realized, like, look, as soon as there's an election, I'm not going to get another mandate. Like Canadians aren't going to like congratulate me, pat me on the back and give me a raise. They're not going to promote him to a higher role. This is pretty much as good as it gets for Jagmeet. And so I thought, you know, he's going to try to hold on to this coalition for as long as possible. But I thought like at a certain point that like cynical political attitude wouldn't hold anymore. Like he would feel too embarrassed to his constituents and to the working class people of this country that really built that party, that NDP party is supposed to be for the working class. I don't think Jagmeet even pretends to be connected to the working class anymore. He's sort of, you know, True North reported that he drives around Ottawa in a Maserati, often with, you know, designer Gucci and Versace handbags. Like he's about
as far from it as you can be.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I agree with you on the holding power and everything, but I'd like to think if I'm ever in that position, eventually just walking anywhere in Canada and getting shouted and catcalled and everything, eventually like, is it worth it anymore? Like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not going to be welcomed anywhere in this country after this is all said and done.
See, but I think that people like Trudeau and presumably Jagmeet Singh, they have it in their heads that the reason that they're not popular is because of like right-wing extremism and like the MAGA forces and misinformation and disinformation, which is why anytime there's like a problem, I don't know if you saw the foreign interference report came out earlier this week, and the recommendation was literally, we need another government agency monitoring online misinformation and disinformation. It's like, what? We have like a real problem with foreign adversarial like agents in Canada operating without check, and your solution is, again, we got to crack down on free speech online. And I know Justin Trudeau has said it during interviews that the real reason he's not popular is because of these right-wing people online. Like, I think they've convinced himself, like I think Jagmeet Singh's convinced himself that anyone shouting him on the streets is just a terrible racist. That's like the only reason why you wouldn't like a person like him. But again, to me, it's so cynical. I can't believe that he can, with a straight face, continue to play this game. So let's talk about the latest. This week, we learned from the Globe and Mail that Ottawa is planning pandemic-level relief for workers and businesses if Trump imposes its tariffs. So the federal government is planning a multi-billion dollar pandemic-style bailout for workers and businesses if the 25% taxes come in as early as February 1. This is according to sources. We'd kind of heard Trudeau and his officials hinting about this, but then the Globe and Mail kind of spells it out. COVID 2.0, like they use the COVID pandemic to lock us all down and then to pay us to do nothing, ballooning the country into like unimaginable debt, not to mention printing so much money, flooding the economy with dollars that's made everything expensive. And we're still dealing with that cost of living crisis. And here they are again. They're going to do it all over again. They've got the playbook. They're going to roll it out. All they need is, you know, someone to support them. And here's Jagmeet Singh on Tuesday saying that he would be open to supporting the government's work relief program. Let's play that clip.
If Trump follows through on his plan with tariffs, would you keep the Liberals in power and allow for the passage of a work relief program before supporting a non-confidence motion?
I'll just start off by the fact that I've spoken with a lot of workers who are deeply worried about what the Trump tariffs might mean. They say, you know, I will, sometimes I lay awake at night saying, if that tariff goes through, do I lose my job? And what's going to happen to my kids? What's going to happen to my family? And we think about the analysis that's out there. If those Trump tariffs come in place, there are hundreds and thousands of Canadian jobs at risk. Think about what that means for those workers, hundreds of thousands of workers, for their families, for those communities. This could be devastating for our country. So we do need to have a plan in place to support those that are impacted, those businesses, those workers, most importantly. I have not had any conversations with other opposition leaders. I think we need to come together to have a discussion about what is the best way forward. I've not had any discussions with the government related to this. If there is any desire to move forward, the government should call us together like we did during COVID and discuss a plan that supports workers.
So, I mean, the answer to that question should have just been no. I already said, I was already very clear in December, I'm not propping up this government anymore. Instead, he likes a policy, he likes socialism, you know, he wants to strike a deal. There is some irony here, because even in the Globe and Mail story, it says that the bulk of potential spending on new programs to help laid off workers and businesses affected by the tariffs will require legislative approval, which could not take place until Parliament resumes sitting on March 24th. So the reason that we don't have a parliament until March 24th is because Trudeau prorogued parliament so they could have a Liberal leadership race. So if this program was so urgent and so important to deal with Trump, then why would you prorogue parliament to have a leadership? Like, none of this makes any sense. Jagmeet Singh just really putting his foot in the mouth, to the point where I think that he probably heard back from Canadians, because on Thursday he came out and, you know, he flip-flopped again. So we have a clip of him saying, you know, actually, no, never mind. He says after previously saying that he'd prop up the Liberals, NDP leader now says he'll vote down the government as soon as possible. Let's play that clip.
The Liberals seem more focused on themselves. I have a specific message to the Liberals. If you're serious about supports for workers, I'm demanding that the Liberal government call back Parliament. Let's put before Parliament a package to protect workers, support workers that are impacted by these tariffs, and to support communities. The workers behind me are for Sault Ste. Marie. Sault Ste. Marie is a community in a city that could be hard hit by these tariffs. So let's stand up for the Sioux. Let's stand up for all communities across Canada that are going to be hard hit by the tariffs. And let's put in place supports before the worst happens. So I'm calling on the Liberal government to recall Parliament, bring Parliament back. Let's pass legislation that supports workers, because we're going to have an election in the spring. Nothing changes around that. We are going to be voting down the government in March. But there's still 2 months. If the Liberals think that they can wait 2 months before they bring in legislation, they are wrong. That would allow workers to suffer for 2 months. That is not the right way to do things. So I'm calling on the Liberals, recall Parliament, put forward protections for workers before Parliament. Let's get the opposition leaders together. Obviously, we need to support that kind of package, and then let's have an election in the spring.
Oh, Sean, this is just so unbelievable. He's saying in the same clip, recall Parliament so we can vote through this legislation, and also we're going to have an election in March. We're going to vote them down. Like, which one is it? He didn't say that he was going to vote down the government in March. He said at the next possible sitting, he was going to vote them down. So presumably, if we recall Parliament, he's going to vote them down. Now he's saying, come back to Parliament, let's pass this big socialism relief program, and then I'll vote you down.
Do you trust a single word he says?
No.
I listen to the clips, and I just I see a guy dancing a tune. And I don't like it. I can't believe, you know, like, there's lots of things in our government I just don't fully understand. I keep trying to, like, you know, prorogation, for Pete's sake, right? I'm like, what is that? Like, why do they get to do this? You know, oh, the government, and I'm not sitting here just giving Liberals crap. Conservatives have done it too before. It's not like it's just one, it's just a part of our government. I'm like, why would we have that allowed? That makes zero sense. And yet they do it. And so we sit here, and we're all worried about Trump and the tariffs instead of, you know, like, I don't understand this government, but this has been them, their MO from the beginning. Instead of just doing what they need to do to get rid of any disagreement with Trump, protect the border, one, maybe get rid of some illegals going down there, two, and not having to worry about tariffs. They're like, well, no, maybe we should call them back and have a thing about money spending to protect the workers. It's like, how about you just fix the problem? No, we're going to get together. We're gonna get together, folks, and we're going to talk about how we're going to protect the workers. You protect the workers by fixing the border. I don't know what more you need to say. Like, I just, this is insane. But this is Canada. This is our current government. The NDP is, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it, not a real party, folks. Like, this is just, like, tell Jagmeet, vote him out. Let's have an election. Let's get on with life so that life doesn't get really, really difficult. Because if you continue to go down this path, assuming Donald Trump ever did put on 25% tariffs, yeah, sure, it's going to hurt their economy. It's going to hurt us immensely. And all we need to do is just fix the problem of what he's talking about. And yet we seem to want to go down this other track and give Jagmeet more screen time and everything else. It just drives me nuts. I don't get it. And yet here we are in 2025, Candace, waiting for prorogation to dissolve so we can get them back in there so that we can assume they're going to go, we're voting them down. But nobody can even figure out right now if the NDP is going to support that. It's just, it's a big frustration on my side with Canada and our government system. It's just, it's messed up. I learned this in Alberta. So I listen, everybody's pointing to if Carney or whoever becomes the next prime minister, he's unvoted or wasn't voted in as prime minister. But when it was Danielle Smith in Alberta, because the same thing happened, mm-hmm. we all applauded it. So which is it, right? We have to figure this out. And I don't even know how you make large changes like that. I just stare at it and I go, if I don't vote you in, how can you be the leader of a country? It makes zero sense, or the province, or anywhere for that matter. And yet in Canada, we're seeing it play out. You're like, in the last 3 years, we've seen it play out multiple times. You're like, this is strange. I don't know how this is, how it works, but it is.
You're right. Like, there's so many times where you hear something, it sounds like a conspiracy theory, right? It's like Canada is about to appoint its first World Economic Forum prime minister, who's a selected. He's not elected by the people, but he's like plopped in from like elite, basically. And you're like, that can't be true. That can't be real. And then you look at it, it's like, oh no, that's exactly what's going to happen. That is very real. I struggle with that too, because look, like, I am not a big proponent of like excessive federal power. I don't think that it's a very good thing. I don't like the idea that the prime minister basically has free reign in Canada, like can do whatever he wants, tell the governor general what to do. There are balances of power in place that are there to have checks and balances. Like, you know, you have a Senate, but our Senate is unelected, completely unaccountable. Our governor general is a puppet head, like a puppet figurehead, doesn't do anything really, just at the beck and call of the prime minister. And then you look at the American system, and like, I'm not a big fan in general of executive orders. I think that the purpose of Congress is to have like legislation passed by elected officials. That's why we elect them, or why Americans elect them in the States. But then, you know, when you see how much these institutions have decayed over time and how just absolutely corroded they are and how broken they are, you see a figure like Trump come in with these sweeping executive orders. I think there were 900 of them on day one. And I was like cheering him on. I'm like, I'm here for this. Like, this needs to be done. The U.S. and under Trump is so action oriented. Like, every one of those executive orders was just so powerful. And it's like, we're not going to do this anymore. You know, this whole gender, like ideological nonsense, we're not doing that anymore. That's
what done. Are you trying to say, Candace? There isn't 76 genders?
Well, can you go ahead and name some of them there, John? But, you know, it's like in principle, I don't really like executive orders. But I do like these ones, and I think that they're so necessary and so needed to change the system.
Well, did we ever think we were going to be arguing about men playing in women's sports? Did we ever think that? No, that's an insane idea. And yet here it is.
I agree. Look, I grew up as a little hockey player. Like, when I was like 11 years old and you asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I wanted to be the first woman in the NHL. Like, that was the thing I wanted to do. Although I think there was a woman at one point. It was like a
goalie for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah. And I'm forgetting her name.
I had her poster on my wall. But I think that was like a publicity stunt or something.
Still, she was the first.
She did it. Yeah. And like, that's what I wanted to do. Then, you know, my parents like allowed me to like continue in this delusion for a short while. And then they were like, you know, Candace, like, that's just not going to happen. And like, cause I played with my brothers and I played in the boys league when I was little. And then obviously when you get a little bit older, you go through puberty and it's like, okay, this isn't going to work anymore. Like, I'm not good enough and I'm not big enough and I'm not strong enough. I went and played with the girls and I didn't like it at first because I was more, like, I was a better player than them. But eventually like everyone caught up and like, I realized like, hey, I don't actually want to like play like really
competitive hockey. That's not my thing. I still love hockey, but like, you know, I like sometimes think about this. Like, if I was 11 or 12 and someone was like, you know, you're a tomboy, Candace, that means that you're probably just a boy inside. And you think like, what would that have done to like my mind? I mean, it's just, to me, it's so perverted that we do this to people. The whole purpose of women's sports is to allow women to play like competitively, because if we were just playing against the boys, we wouldn't be good enough and it wouldn't exist. And so this idea that there's boys being allowed to play with girls, and I mean, it's just so wrong. And I'm surprised that it was allowed at all. I think it's just such a breath of fresh air to see someone standing up against it. And I hope the tide like quickly goes across Canada, because I think Canada's just so, it's like, we're so nice and we're too polite to say like, actually, this isn't right. And this shouldn't happen. I wasn't planning on talking about this topic, but I'm pretty worked up about it, as you can tell, Sean. So what's your perspective on all of it?
Well, the executive orders, that's where you started. The thing about executive orders is it really signals which way incoming administration is going to go. And one of the things that has irritated me immensely since I started into the political realm in Canada is how much we stare at the United States for what doesn't happen here, right? So even though Trump's doing amazing things in the United States, we're not the United States. But him talking about going back to two genders, him bringing back, I think it's 8,000, if I recall, maybe it's a touch more than that, 8,000 military members who wouldn't get the jab and giving them back pay is like, yeah. That makes sense. And when a world leader signals that, is, and it being the U.S., which, I mean, obviously, there's a reason why we stare at them for a lot of what goes on in the world, that's going to give, and I think I can't remember if you said it before or after we started, but, like, it gives confidence to Canadians, like, oh, it's okay. And which is funny because we already know it's okay. We already know that some of the things going on in our country are not okay. And yet we've allowed them to persist. And I can't scold anyone. I always jump on the grain myself. You know, when I first started the podcast, I didn't talk about any of this. I was focused on hockey, NHL, athletes, et cetera, into COVID. I just kept dragging my feet. And eventually I was like, if we're not going to talk about this, we're never getting out of it. And so I started interviewing all the different people. It's led me, you know, to where I sit today. And I think there's a lot more Canadians realizing that if we don't get active, if we don't start to talk about things, if we don't start to get in a few disagreements with our neighbors, then you're never going to have things change. And we're going to continue down this road of, you know, not hiring the best person, hiring whatever diversity looks like so that you have one of each. And we're seeing that play out and everything. Like, I mean, you sent me the article, and you probably have it somewhere, and I'm probably jumping ahead of you, but the Canadian military. So I called the Canadian military, one of the guys I have on my show regularly. I think it's 72% obesity rate in the Canadian military right now, among all the other problems they have. Mm-hmm. And we got talking about it. And he's like, well, I don't know. You played high-level hockey. How many obese guys did you have? And I was like, obese? I don't know. Maybe one, but I wouldn't call him obese. I would call him, you know, the body type of like, he just carries around more weight. And he goes, that's how the Canadian military used to be. Used to be in a group. There was 600 of them all stationed overseas. And I'm like, oh, how many of them were obese? He's like, I don't know, maybe two. We'll do the math on that. That's like, that's less than 1%. So let's even go high, 5%, folks. 72%. That'd be like watching the Edmonton Oilers. Sorry. That's, you know, our team out here. You'd be watching the Toronto Maple Leafs. And your top line, like two-thirds of them are fat and can't move around. And I know you guys had Phil Kessel, and I know there were some things there. But, like, that would be your entire team. Like, that doesn't even make any sense. But that's where this DEI has gotten us to. And it's really permeated every form, institution, society as a whole here in Canada. And so I go back to the Trump and what he's done with executive orders. And it's really signaled we're getting rid of that. And we're getting rid of that real fast. That's what the United States looks to me like they're going to be doing here under Trump.
Well, I do want to get to the obesity in the military story that was reported by the National Post earlier this week. We'll get to that. I want to talk first just this whole thing. You know, you said that you kind of ended up reluctantly having to talk about politics. You started wanting to talk about competitive hockey and sports. And then you kind of pulled into the political world. I mean, you interviewed some of the real like lightning rods that were raising the alarm bell with concerns about our entire approach to COVID. And then last Friday, we saw the Alberta government release its COVID report. So this is kind of one of those rare instances where the government that was in power, Premier Jason Kenney, got ousted, replaced by Danielle Smith.
Yes.
And she said, okay, let's open up the books and let's figure out what happened. True outsider, because I don't think like in any other province, liberal or conservative, they would allow this sort of like forensic accounting, like let's look back and really discuss what went wrong and what happened. So it's, to me, there's value in this report for all Canadians and for everyone in the world, because so many governments went down the same disastrous path of like, lock it all down, shut down the schools. I mean, you're a parent of young kids, so am I. I was just so totally outraged by the way that they treated us during COVID. I mean, I was already pretty, you know, conservative and political. This like really radicalized me. I think it radicalized a lot of people to just say like, I don't trust you. I don't want you in charge of anything to do with my life. Like made me a lot more vocal about it. Anyway, so I saw you commenting on this Alberta COVID report. Really interesting things that you don't really hear from government, urging halting vaccines for youth and low-risk individuals, talking really about lack of data behind a lot of these protocols that were brought in. Why don't you sort of tell us about your thoughts on this report?
Well, one of the things, I'm originally from a small town in Saskatchewan, and Saskatchewan and Alberta are very similar, but now I live in Alberta. Okay. So for your listeners, just so there's a background. And one of the things I love about being Albertan now is they are an unruly bunch. We are an unruly bunch, which means if you do stupid things, we are going to absolutely catcall you until we try and get things right. And, so I would sit here and say, I actually had Dr. Gary Davidson on the podcast, right? And it wasn't an applaud moment of like, wow, you did an amazing job. Although Dr. Gary Davidson, if you're listening to this, I think he did do an amazing job. I was more irritated right off the hop, Candace, okay? And I read this to Gary and I'll read it to you, okay? Chapter one of this report is governance and flow of information. Sounds lovely. And this is what I commented. There's a few things written in here that were in the report and then some of my comments. And I said, the flow of information is hardly a flow when the author points out there's a reluctance of key stakeholders to acknowledge and engage with our mandate, and that there appears to be a fundamental lack of transparency and willingness to reveal information and discuss decisions and actions taken by AHS during the pandemic. AHS is Alberta Health Services. So, right, a lot of what happened here, we've already had court cases tell us it was the politicians making decisions, that they didn't have the data, and on and on and on. I'm irritated with this report because the report is supposed to be all the data. Well, where's all the data held? AHS. AHS wouldn't give it to them. So, like, we got a report that isn't fully complete. In my mind, you know, like, this report is amazing because it kind of gives credence to what a lot of people have been saying. It legitimizes what people have been saying for the last 4 years, right? Like, masks, they weren't effective. The vaccines, there's studies after study. They quote in here about Pfizer's own trials. They talk about therapeutics. They talk about all these different things that have become very taboo. You know, the most popular one's ivermectin, probably because of Joe Rogan and CNN. And they just walk back through all the stuff. It's in a government form now. There's 200 and I think it's 59 pages. Don't quote me on that. I urge any Canadian to go give it a read, especially if you're like, what is he talking about vaccines? And so if you don't know what I'm talking about, this would be eye-opening. For me, talking about it for 4 years, I want to, and I think a lot of Albertans want, a little more teeth in holding our government accountable. And so it getting released at 3 o'clock on a Friday in the middle of, you know, problems with the border and
trade war. Yeah.
Right. We go
cycle.
We see what you're doing and I don't like it. And so it's what I love about Albertans. We're not happy with the report just coming out. We want to see things like Trump is doing. We want to see these action items, be laid out. And there are some really cool things, that Dr. Gary Davidson and the group that built it, kind of say you should look into getting rid of this vaccine for kids and youth, and a whole bunch of items that the government of Alberta can chew on. And I really hope they're contemplating them. I really hope they're going to take some of the information that's been built by Gary Davidson, Dr. Gary Davidson and his team, and use them. That's my hope. But sitting here in media, after everything we've said about every other part of government, I'm like, well, I think it was Andrew Lawton once upon a time, and others, I should say, that told me, you know, you got great politicians, you got bad politicians. Create the atmosphere, create the conditions for bad politicians to do the right thing. I don't think Danielle Smith's a bad politician by any stretch of the imagination, but I certainly do want to create the conditions that they have to move on some of these action items. And we've seen how mainstream media has demonized it. Like, I mean, have you seen the the picture? I think it's out of the Globe and Mail of, you know, her talking to these ugly looking doctors. Meanwhile, all the associations are against her. And it's like, really? Like, look at the people who are writing this. This is where we're still at in 2025. And, so, yeah, I mean, it's always good, though, for myself to hear an outside perspective of like, wow, I wish our province would do this. But here in Alberta, we're an unruly bunch and we want more.
Well, I think, first of all, Danielle Smith deserves to be applauded for even doing this report. I'll just read through a little bit about what the report said. So it was commissioned by Alberta Premier Danielle Smith in 2022, mandate to explore the province's response to COVID-19. The task force included prominent medical professionals, as you were discussing, including Drs. Gary Davidson, who's on your show, Jay Bhattacharya, who's a prominent Stanford doctor who just got appointed to the Trump administration, and Biriam Bridal. The final report recommended that the provincial government stop providing vaccines for healthy children and teenagers. A report revealed evidence to suggest that it was not effective. The report also alleged that Alberta Health Services removed a dashboard after it showed higher hospitalization rates among the vaccinated than the unvaccinated. And it also said that there's a lack of reliable data providing that COVID-19 vaccines protect children from severe cases. A task force that published the research said COVID-19 vaccines were not designed to stop transmission. I mean, that's all pretty remarkable. And I'll just get to, because you mentioned the media response. I mean, fake news is going to do what fake news does. We used to do a segment on the Candace Malcolm Show called Fake News Fridays. You know, now there's just too much fake news. We have to include it in every show. We can't just save it for Fridays. But just because, hey, it's Friday, let's go through some of them. So this is how the media covered this report. The CBC said that Alberta doctors and scientists say that the COVID-19 response report should be dismissed, basically just saying that these are, you know, dangerous ideas. We have a City News report saying that the COVID-19 report is slammed as anti-science by doctors, associations, and the NDP. We have a clip of that. Let's play that clip.
A new $2 million report on Alberta's pandemic response is calling for a halt to COVID-19 vaccines. But the document is being widely criticized, called anti-science and anti-evidence, by the Alberta Medical Association.
We were pretty disappointed in the findings and how things were represented.
The NDP opposition agrees, arguing the money should have instead been used to improve healthcare.
$2 million would have funded orthopedic surgeries at the Royal Alex Hospital for 8 years. And we spent $2 million to throw taxpayers' money at every anti-vax extremist around the world, not Albertans, not experts.
Let's show a few more. The Edmonton Journal accusing it of sows distrust. Alberta doctors slam the government's COVID-19 task force report as misinformation. Everything's misinformation. And then I think this is a this is Global News. They said that anti-science and anti-evidence report, doctors pan report into Alberta's pandemic response. So of course the media doesn't like it, because the media were the ones propping up this nonsense throughout the entire COVID pandemic. I mean, Sean, you say that Albertans are an unruly bunch. What's with your media? What's wrong with the journalists there? Why don't they why are they pushing the line and trying to?
Well, I love Naheed Nenshi saying $2 million could have been used this way. You know how much AHS, Alberta Health Services, gets in a year, or at least this coming year? I think $16.4 billion. Now, I'll leave it to your listeners to do the math on that. I get 2 million is a big number. I do, because I have my own qualms with it. Not in the way Naheed Nenshi's talking about it, but I'm like, we got $16.4 billion going to our Alberta Health Services, and they suck. Like, I mean, I can safely sit here and say, there's lots of wonderful people in here. I'm not saying the people suck. I'm saying, how many people, you know, do you talk to in Alberta, and we can't find a doctor? We're just like anywhere else in Canada. Now, you're asking media? I don't know. Why? I always go back. You know, I'm so new into this, right? Relative. I go back to the Freedom Convoy. I caught it in Ontario, the edge of Ontario, and followed it. And I interviewed people along the way. And I remember thinking, where are all the reporters? Like, where are they all? Where, like, CBC wants the ratings to go up? They should have a live stream of this thing going to Ottawa. Everybody would have tuned in. I mean, everybody was tuning into anything that was put out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. And so you go, well, why are they demonizing Danielle Smith and everything else? Well, probably that's the only way their listeners are still paying attention, because the rest of us have tuned them out a long time ago. Like, all those stuff, I'm just like, this is a joke. I don't even think half the, well, no, it's an insane. I always have Chris Sims from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation on. So shout out to her. She's fantastic. And we talk about the CBC and, like, you know, like primetime viewership in Canada. And, like, I don't know, was it 2% or less?
Like, yeah.
You know, like, they're a dying breed. They're on their way out, Candace, would be my honest opinion. I don't know why they haven't changed. I assume there's some incentive in the background that I don't know about.
Well, they know where their bread is buttered. They know where the Trudeau bucks are coming from, and it's in towing the line and promoting the narrative. I remember the COVID, or sorry, the Freedom Convoy is the 3-year anniversary. And that was like one of the worst examples of just like, just two storylines that don't line up, right? Like, I'm watching the Freedom Convoy online, you know, directly from the people that are in it, and showing remarkable scenes of Canadians lining up on overpasses. Like, to me, it was just like a moment of solidarity before they even got to Ottawa, when, you know, seeing those trucks and those big rigs driving down the road with people cheering them on. You know, I heard from volunteers that were like giving out sandwiches, and little kids were writing messages of hope to these truckers. To me, they were like, they were carrying the mantle for all of us. They were expressing the things that I had been feeling about the lockdowns from day one. And it was like a beautiful sight. And then the media just instantly said that these were radicals and that they were extremists. Actually, at first, I don't know if you remember this, the first CBC report on the Freedom Convoy said that the truckers were actually protesting unsafe road conditions. and they were pretending that it was about something totally different. And then, you know, the next day it was like, no, they got a memo. Let's change the narrative. Oh, no, these are Nazis. These are radicals. And it was like, I can see with my own eyes who these people are, and they're not how you described it. I can't believe that Canadians continue to take the media seriously after that. That to me was one of the worst examples of it. And to this day, when I walk around Ottawa, people come up to me and they say, like, thank you for True North. Thank you for your coverage of the Freedom Convoy. And that was the first time I really saw how much the CBC deceives us and how much they lie, because I saw the convoy with my own eyes. And then I was watching on the CBC, and it was like they were covering two totally, totally different events. Sean, I want to talk a little bit more about what's happening down in the States, because Robert Kennedy Jr., RFK Jr., had his confirmation hearing earlier this week. And, you know, you said that you were kind of new to politics. I feel like I'm kind of new to this, like, health and wellness trend. I've always been like a bit of a health freak and really like kind of particular when it comes to food. But I think having kids, and then also just the pandemic and the fact that I just don't feel like I can trust the people who I was supposed to trust before, made me like really radical on this kind of thing. Like the idea of like, I don't want my kids eating food that's like manufactured somewhere in a plastic bag with ingredients that I can't read. Things that like food that I ate as a kid, and then you just kind of trust that, oh, well, I ate it, you know, like Fruit Loops or like Goldfish or anything. And then you read the labels, and it's just like horrifying. It's like, why are we giving this stuff to our children? You know, or anything, even just like the idea of like the number of like microplastics that are in our food and all the different chemicals that go in, from like the pesticides that are sprayed all over our food to the way that they're preserved to the packaging. It's just like compounding. And then you look around, I mean, we're talking about obesity in the media, but the reality is that we are a very unhealthy society. Like, I think this should be a much bigger political issue. I know it's like a little bit touchy because people don't like to talk about, you know, it's a personal thing. And I'm kind of a libertarian too, like live and let live. But the idea that it's like, there's a lot of ingredients that are in our food that I would consider to be poison. It's hard for me to explain to my kids, like, why can't they have the junk food that comes in the goodie bag at the end of the birthday party? And I'm saying, like, you know, it's not healthy. It's not healthy. And it's hard to make that case to your kids when they just want to like be kids and eat icing and eat unhealthy food when all their friends are. But I love the idea that more and more people are waking up, are demanding change. So I think RFKJ really represents this change. Let's play a couple clips here. So this one here, Robert Kennedy Jr. is saying that he won't take away your snacks. He says, I won't take food away from anybody. That's not what he's trying to do. He just wants us to be aware of the health impacts of our food. Let's play that clip.
I don't want to take food away from anybody. If you like a cheeseburger, a McDonald's cheeseburger, a Diet Coke, which my boss loves, and you should be able to get them. If you want to eat Hostess Twinkies, you should be able to do that. But you should know what the impacts are on your family and on your health.
I would go even further than that, because I don't think that we need to have some of these ingredients in our food. Next clip here is on RFKJ saying that he's going to end the chronic disease epidemic.
And the first thing I've done every morning for the past 20 years is to get on my knees and pray to God that he would put me in a position to end the chronic disease epidemic and to help America's children. That's why I'm so grateful to President Trump for the opportunity to sit before you today and seek your support and partnership in this endeavor.
And so, I mean, he's kind of the face of this. I don't necessarily like him or agree with him. You know, he's a Democrat. He's a Kennedy. He's got like a very kind of interesting past, colorful past, let's put it that way. But he's kind of come to represent this. And I loved the fact that his movement, the Make America Healthy Again movement, you know, he ran for president for the Democrats and the Dems blocked him and wouldn't let him run, which is why he was running as an independent. And then he came over and endorsed Trump. But at that time, it was like, you know, this movement is very mainstream. Like if you're on Instagram, especially if you're a parent, this is the kind of thing that I see. And I love the fact that there's a community that I can kind of like commiserate with on how hard it is to make sure your kids are healthy, the steps that are needed. Like I try really hard to make sure that my kids aren't eating off of like plastic plates or using plastic things like water bottles, all that kind of stuff, to avoid the microplastics that are getting into their system and could have really, you know, scary impacts. I just think it's great that this is now mainstream. It's in front of us. We're making these changes. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on all this.
Huh? Well, that's a big topic. I think one of the effects of COVID, unintended consequences, if you would, is the Make America Healthy Again slogan, everything like that's come with it. Because, you know, if you'd asked, I don't know, out of 10 people, you can put that number higher or lower, wherever you want to put it, about vaccines. I mean, if we just do that right off the hop, I don't know how many people would have said they were against them before COVID. I would argue is probably 8 in 10 were for them. I'm just ballparking.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
And now I'm not saying that 8 out of 10 are against them, but I would say it's majority would question them now. And so when RFK Jr. is up there talking, he has been a vocal person through COVID, and for a lot of people to see him get put into the new Trump administration and to have an opportunity to open up this conversation around just food in general has been really interesting to watch. I think if you're a parent and you don't think eating McDonald's every single day is probably not the greatest idea, I don't know what RFK in that position is going to do for you. He's probably not going to do much most of us don't already know is what I'm trying to say. But there are other things that are coming into, you know, you mentioned pesticides, different things like that. There's lots of things that I think we haven't studied or in the mainstream hasn't been out there. And some of it is the technology we interact with on a daily basis, the different lights. There's been a lot of stuff coming out about blue light and the different lights and how they affect the human body and stuff. And with us not going away from technology, but coming closer to technology as a parent, I want to understand that more, because I can watch my children and see how they react after watching TV or an iPad or something like that. I can see the effects of that as quickly as I can see if they drink a can of Coke, mm-hmm. and watch them go from 0 to 10,000 in about 2 minutes, maybe less. And so I think for a lot of people, him being kind of a figurehead that gets put in there, that's what he represents. He represents somebody who's going to go in there and rattle some cages and try and get some answers. And I think if you're, you know, watching the Canadian military and seeing the obesity rate, or you're just looking at the American population and seeing the obesity rate there, and then all the health problems that kids have and on, you're going, something just doesn't make any sense. And they need to look into that. They do. And my hope is they will. And my hope is that they find some things that they can change that will make, you know, it the burden on parents maybe go down just a smidge. Because if you're worried about eating on a plastic plate or drinking out of a plastic water bottle or the 10,000 other things that us parents worry about, my hope is that they can find some things that just makes sense that they can get rid of or, you know, maybe veer away from so that we don't have to worry about absolutely everything that goes into every substance product, you know, on and on and on. Because, you know, like I sit here on this side, a dad of three kids, and there's a lot of things you have to worry about on a day-to-day basis.
Well, absolutely. And that's why I think like I said, like I'm a libertarian and I think that people should generally be able to do what they want. And like 10 years ago, I would have said like a tax on soda is ridiculous. If people want to drink soda, like let them drink it. But then you think about like the other way around that like, we have so much faith in our institutions. We give so much like trust to these officials who get to like regulate our food. And then especially in the States, this is a major issue where these senators and these like heads of these government agencies go back and forth between working for big pharma, big food, and working in government, or, you know, they're politicians are getting funded by these people. So it's like, do you actually really have our best interest in mind? Are you just trying to make money off of us because it's a little bit cheaper to use this product, but this product hasn't really been studied and it might have like a long-term health impact? Like I had this issue during my pregnancies where I'd have like bad heartburn. So I took heartburn medication. And then when I got pregnant again, I went to go take that heartburn medication and I had been pulled off the shelf because it was like carcinogen and had been causing cancer. It's like, gee, like, thanks guys. I'm supposed to trust you to keep me safe. And I can't, right? And so I just think that it's like, I'm not trying to shame parents. I'm like, I get it, right? It's really hard. And like, I have a lot of them. So it's like, I have four kids and like sometimes you just have to give them an iPad or, you know, to get through a long car drive, or, you know, you just have to give them some packaged food because they're hungry and that's all that's available. But really, like when you look into some of the ingredients and the impact that it's having, it's like this stuff shouldn't be on the shelf. I know that there was a pretty viral scene during a recent Senate commission, a committee hearing in the States again, where the woman showed two different Fruit Loops. One was in Canada and one was in the States. And in the States, it was like neon and like bright colors because they use these artificial dyes. And in Canada, they don't. They use like natural food, like coloring. And it's like, why can't we at least have the same standards that Canada has? I think that those kind of things are just like so important because being a busy mom and like just wanting to be able to trust that.
Candace, that's what we hope out of media, right? So like what we're learning is, you know, you got to be selective on your media now, right? Because once upon a time, we just trusted the CBC, and probably at one point in time, they did. They went and investigated this all for us because that's what journalists are supposed to do. Then they're supposed to give us the information, and we're supposed to go, I don't care if my kids have Fruit Loops, or I do care. And what we're learning here over the last, once again, I just point to my own career, last 5 years, is that's not quite the case anymore, right? Like, journalism has been bought. Big pharma has been doing a lot of buying, you know, like when it comes to the food industry, they've been doing some things, right? And on it goes. And that doesn't mean you don't trust anyone, but, it's certainly as a parent, I'm doing a lot more vetting of where my trust goes before I just believe something wholeheartedly. And, it's okay to shame parents, right? Like I think in today's world, at times we get so busy and we think we're so busy that we farm out who's going to look after our kids except for us. So, you know, daycares, okay. Schools, okay. The TV, and on and on and on it goes. And, you know, at some point, you got to step in and be the parent. And I'm not scolding your listeners. I'm, you know, every time I say these things, folks, it's as much for me as it is for anyone else. And, you know, there's tough decisions in there. There's things you got to draw back from. There's ways you can be around your kids more and more. And the thing is if you're around your kids a lot, you're going to start to understand that giving them TV all day long, although it might make your immediate life a touch easier, the consequences of that after trying to pull them off of that, you're going to see firsthand. And then long term, they're having ideas. Because I mean, like, just look at Disney and different platforms. Some of the content they're giving our kids now, right? You used to be able to trust that a Disney cartoon mm-hmm. wouldn't have a bunch of things in there that you're like, why is that in there? I don't even understand why. And so I think we're just beginning to understand that a lot of these realms that parents used to trust, we have to be very cautious on and have to really pay attention and have to be involved. And if you're involved, you're gonna find some things out about your kids and be like, oh, well, they just shouldn't have X. And kids are different. All of them are. I mean, the effects of sugar are pretty much standard across the board, I think. And the effects of not getting enough sleep, let's say, are pretty standard across the board. And there's some standardization of effects on kids, but there's going to be different kids that can handle different situations. And that's for the parent to be involved in, and to watch your children and have conversations with them and all these wonderful things that being a parent is all about. And we just have to be involved in our kids' life, no matter how busy you get or I get. You know, like sometimes as a parent, you got to make some sacrifices on your own side of the pleasure scale to ensure that your kids are getting what they need.
Oh, I completely agree with all of that. Like I say, I don't mean to shame parents because I get that. Like I think I'm in like a very lucky situation where, you know, I have four kids. I'm kind of a stay-at-home mom, but I also get to run this cool media business on the side. My mom lives with us. So I have like kind of like a second, like a built-in stay-at-home grandma that's always there for the kids. Like I'm personally very opposed to daycare. I don't think that kids should be going to daycare at all. It's not good for the kids. It's not good for their attachment. It's not good to have strangers like changing their diaper or giving them a bottle. Like my personal standards for my kids are quite different, I think, than like what has become the norm in our generation. And I don't like the fact that it's the norm that a woman will drop her kid off to daycare so she can go to a job that she doesn't like. I think it'd be much better, more fulfilling for that woman to just raise the kids herself, and the kids would end up better. I have all these kinds of views, but I get it. And to your point, like when you give your kid sugar, you're going to see the negative consequences immediately. When you allow your kids an iPad, it's like crack to them, right? And you'll see the naughty behavior come out like almost instantly, which is why
instantaneously.
Yeah. And same with, I mean, with like even something innocuous like Cocomelon, it's like, oh, it's a nice little nursery rhyme. So the next thing you know, there's like kids in drag and like two dads. It's like, no, no, no. You have to like take that away and just tell your kids to stop. I want to segue that to this unbelievable image that I saw. The Chopper's Drug Mart has basically gone woke. I don't think that they got the memo that we're sick of this stuff and we don't want to see it anymore.
Well, they're about to, Candace.
Yeah, I hope so. My tweet went a little viral. Let's show that. I just said, this is creepy and insulting to Canadian women. Didn't corporate Canada get the message that we're sick of this woke nonsense? I don't want to see this while I'm out shopping with my kids. Like, take it down or face a boycott. I don't want to see that. Like, it's weird and creepy. I don't need to see a man with a beard wearing makeup. Like, it's just like, it's a weird fetish thing. It's creepy. It's sexual. If I'm out shopping with my kids and my four-year-old daughter's like, mommy, why does that woman have a beard? Like, I don't want to have to explain that to her, right? Like, I'm going to explain that to her.
And you shouldn't have to.
When she's age appropriate, right? When she's a little older and she might understand it. But when you're out in public and you see something like that, it's like they're forcing it on you. And I don't want to see it. I'm done with it. And I think that if anything, the fact that Trump got elected, he's given us permission to just say, like, enough is enough. Canada needs to get, like, catch up to speed. Like, I have no problem with being gay. I have no problem with gay marriage. Like, we accept that. That's fine. It's your business. Keep it to yourself. I don't need to know about it. Stop, like shoving it in my face, especially around my kids. And when it comes to the trans stuff, men in women's sports, men in women's change rooms, like, men with beards, like, no. I just
men in women's prisons. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny, it isn't funny, okay? But it is kind of funny that Choppers brings this out and you're like, okay, like, I don't know who I need to talk to in there, but you had Bud Light, and I mean, like, that didn't go so well. You had Gillette Razors, that didn't go so well. You know, you had Victoria's Secret. I think it was good to put a trans woman, oh man, in lingerie. I'm like, make it stop, right? And then all you got to do is just see the trend line on how much money they're making, and you're seeing companies reverse course and trying to correct. You're seeing all these big stores get rid of their DEI. You're seeing Donald Trump make an executive order on it. Like, it's coming. It's just like Shoppers Drug Mart. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. I'm like, I saw it. I'm like, really? 2025? We're still there? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. They didn't get the memo. It's like they're stuck back in 2020 where it's like the woke mind virus is just, you know, forced on anyone. And I saw some of the replies, like someone basically just said, I think we have this here, that it's homophobia, nothing else. Like, you know, if you don't like this, it's because of homophobia. Let people be exactly who they want to be. How does this affect you? Well, I'll tell you how it affects me, because I'm shopping with my kid and they see it and they're like, mommy, why does that man have a beard? Why does that lady have a beard? Like, it's weird and confusing. And like, it's not homophobic to say that. I'm sick of it. I don't want it anymore. I think it needs to go away. And hopefully, to your point, like we saw with Bud Light and Target and many others, there will be.
I think that's what's going to happen. How does it affect you? It's like, well, we're perpetuating a lie. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, men can't be women. You can choose to do a lot of different things to your body and your appearance and everything else. That is your choice, by all means. Once again, do what you want to do, but we don't have to act like it's all of a sudden 5 of 10 kids are going to be swapping things and everything else. I think that's honestly insane. And I mean, you call it what you want. Your listeners can call it what they want. I call it common sense, and life is just going to carry on. I don't lose any sleep over it. I laugh at the Shoppers Drug Mart thing because I'm just like, it's ridiculous. And so I won't be going there. And yeah. I'm going to carry on going somewhere else. And that will be my life. And my hope is that they follow the trend of Bud Light and all these different places that when they did it, I mean, you're seeing it on X. It's not like all of a sudden you put it out there and nobody thought, yeah, that's a great idea. They all said, you know, there's a reason why it went viral. Lots of people are not for this. We're seeing it. There's a reason why Donald Trump is signing an executive order saying get rid of DEI policies like immediately. And sadly, Canada right now is still under the intend to resign Trudeau and, the not a real party Jagmeet Singh. And we are sitting here waiting for a new prime minister to come in and hopefully start speaking a little bit of common sense, so that things can maybe veer a different direction.
Okay, the last story I want to get your thoughts on, we've already talked about it a little bit, but let's just go through it here. So obesity in the Canadian military report showed that it's higher than in the general population, according to an internal briefing. This came out on Monday. The thing that surprises me, actually kind of shocks me, if we can just put that back up on the screen there. It says that 68% of Canadian men are considered obese or overweight, and that rate is 78% of men in the military. So like the vast overwhelming majority of people in the military are not healthy. And the vast overwhelming majority of Canadians are not healthy. Like, how is this not the biggest problem in the country? Like, we're not taking care of ourselves. I don't know if it's because our food is poisoning us or because of our lifestyle or because of something else in the environment, but something is severely broken when you have those statistics. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know how to fix it, but I just think that this is like an alarm bell going off and everybody is ignoring it because, you know, we go back to like personal responsibility and like, you know, everybody live their own life and do whatever you want. But it's like at a certain point, like our society is not going to be able to function. We're not going to be able to defend ourselves. Like if there were ever an external like war or something facing like a crisis where men had to go and fight and protect the country, they wouldn't be able to if we continue down this path. What do you think of that?
They would if you let them with Twinkies. They just might not do a great job. The 78% thing, I talked to, I have military roundtables on the podcast, usually monthly. And I talk to guys who've been in and around the military all their lives. And we've been talking about this problem for, I don't know, as long as I've been doing the podcast, essentially. And it's just a lack of discipline, right? So like, you know, it used to be you had to have a certain haircut, you had to do certain things, you had to live up to certain standards. And, well, that's discriminatory. Because now, you know, what if a person can't do that? And what if you can't? Well, we don't want you in the military then, right? Like, and instead, that's not what they did. And so now you have obesity on the rise. And you have certain people being excluded. And you have on and on and on this goes. And so you see like, this isn't shocking, folks. DEI is in full force here in the military. When you have a military force, what do you want in there? I mean, can women be in the military? Absolutely they can. But you want the very best. You want healthy, fit males who can fight. That's what a military is. And our military has gone the opposite way. I mean, we have tampons in the men's bathroom, for Pete's sake. And so now to see this obesity rate, it's like, I don't know. This doesn't shock me on this side. It's, you know, I've probably become very cynical on this. Like, we need a change of culture in this country. We need a change of culture in the military to get us out of this. Like, somebody needs to get bumped into, break them out of whatever fog they're in. Because, you know, when you say, oh, maybe if there's a war, it's like, we're on the cusp of it. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter what side of Ukraine, Russia you're on. I don't care. Okay. NATO is talking about sending 200,000 people there. We're a part of NATO. Like, we just need to get it through our heads. Like, you know, we have lived in the most peaceful time in human history, as far as I can see. And I hope it carries on. I really hope it does. But it doesn't carry on while you're sitting eating Cheetos watching the hockey game. Like, you have to become, in my books, a strong man capable of speaking your mind and knowing when something isn't right and stomping it out immediately. So we have a very weak military. It is not great. There's still good people in there, but they're being pushed around and pushed out because of DEI policies, among other things that are happening across society. And, you know, I could probably rant and rave about this all night long. It's 78%. It doesn't shock me. This is what you get when you go this direction. And we're seeing it play out in the military, among other places in our country.
Well, and really, like, you could talk about any public safety force for this. I mean, we just saw it with the Los Angeles fires, where you had like diversity equity hires leading the fire department, and there's like no water, and like there's, you know, promoting the fact that they're lesbians and that they're overweight. It's like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't
get the fire out.
Yeah, I need you to save someone from a fire. Like, can you run into a burning building and carry an adult?
To bring it closer to home, Candace, for me, Jasper, we had the big forest fire, right? And we did a bunch of talking about it. And they, like, the people around there that are in the logging industry and forest management and all that knew this was coming. They've been trying to get the government to listen. But we're so focused on saving the planet, we didn't do forest management. And so then the town burnt down. There we go. Oh, now they just pile a bunch of money in. It's like, look, can we just do what we need to do to make sure that we don't burn ourselves up? And that'll actually, as far as I understand, will promote lots of great things in the forest by doing it. But we equate cutting a tree down with we're destroying the planet. Well, it's more complex than that. And I think more people are like beginning to understand this. And understanding that there's more to all these arguments, it's not so simple. You know, I listened to, I believe it's Ron Paul, Senator Ron Paul, talk about Kennedy and just all the different things. It's more complex than just a one size fits all. And too much of our society is like, oh, we got one answer. That's all it is. And boom, that's what we're going to do. Okay. Well, now you get California fires. Now you get Jasper. And it ain't going to get better anytime soon until we start to adjust how we're doing these things. It doesn't mean go pollute everything. It doesn't mean destroy the planet. But the planet, folks, wants to kill us. We live in a place that gets minus 40. And I've read my ancestors' accounts of coming here. It wasn't a friendly place. We made it a pretty friendly, habitable place. We start taking away things that make it habitable. It's going to become unfriendly very fast. And we're going to realize, man, we're going to have to cut down some trees and do some things that we've been told are, you know, negative, when the whole argument, the whole discussion is more complex than that. And we have to allow for that complexity to be aired and to be discussed so we can come to informed decision-making and make the best choices for our country instead of letting, I'm going to bring it all the way back to the start of the show, NDP Singh hold up Trudeau and this government and just watch the destruction of our nation happen right in front of us. It is just wild to me. And we need more Canadians to get involved. So to all your listeners, I appreciate you being involved, because if you're watching this late in this show, you probably are the people that don't need preached to. You're probably wonderful human beings, and you want to understand and get to the bottom of how Canada works. And I think that's a lot of us here in Canada. We're trying and realizing how many issues we've really got.
Well, Sean, it's an absolute breath of fresh air to hear you talk. I could talk to you all day.
But unfortunately, we run out of time.
Well, what we're going to do, Candace, is we're going to have you on my show, and we'll continue the conversation, and then my audience can hear a little bit about who Candace is. And I appreciate you having me on.
I would love nothing more than that. Before the show started, Sean invited me to come out to his ranch in rural Alberta and shoot some guns. So my husband and I would love to do that. I'm going to take you up on that. That sounds fun. Really a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much, Sean Newman. Go check out the Sean Newman podcast on Substack, everyone. Thank you so much, Sean. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you again.
All right, folks, have a great weekend. It's been such a pleasure. We'll be back next week with all of the news. I'm Candace Malcolm. This is the Candace Malcolm Show. God bless.